Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell, and Bruce Pratt here for Sports Lit 101 as we take a little trip in the Wayback Machine and go back about 50 years. Now, Bruce?
Yeah, and with yesterday's 1968 program and with what Gerald Posner was just talking about regarding Mexico City in the 60s, this book, Something in the Air, is really relevant. Now, Richard Hoffer wrote this originally in 2009. There's a new afterword to this edition. And, you know, now we're looking at this book not only in terms of what went on in 1968, but also what's going on with the NFL and the way that athletes have been told they're not allowed to protest. Now, to go back to 1968, for those who were not there, I was 17. We need to remember that the Mexico City Olympics were held in the early fall. In May, the Soviet Union invaded Czechoslovakia by rolling first into Prague and then throughout the country. We have assassinations. We have terrible strife in our inner cities. And a lot of athletes, especially African-American athletes, and the all-white Harvard crew, who were going to represent the United States and crew, are thinking about boycotting the Olympics. And Harry Edwards and other activists are trying to get that boycott. However, a lot of African-American athletes are saying, if I boycott the Olympics, I boycott my future. You know, I'll have to pay for this. Now, two of the people, one of whom has been on the show here, John Carlos, friend of the show, and Tommy Smith, two of the greatest sprinters America ever produced, at a time when sprinting for Americans was even bigger than it is today, with Jimmy Hines and before that Bob Hayes and Houston McTeer will come along after a lot of great American sprinters. They would break two records in the same race because we were just getting around to the point where the metric distances were going to become the only distances we race. So they would set up two finish lines, one at 200 meters and one at 220 yards, right, which is about three yards later. And they could break a record in the same race. These guys, along with Mel Pender and some others, were really great sprinters. And they didn't know what they were going to do or how they were going to approach these Olympics, but there was always some tension in the air. Now, the other little piece of background we have to remember is these are the highest Olympics ever in more than one sense, but Mexico City is located at 7,000 feet, I think, right about 7,000 feet. And Olympic rules at the time did not allow teams to train for more than a month at altitude. However, if you came from Ethiopia and you lived at altitude, it was okay. So for Jim Ryan and some of the distance runners, this post turned out to be a huge problem. That's also the Olympics where Bob Beamon broke the world long jump record by more than 2 feet. But what's interesting about this book, Something in the Air, is that all of these, the major players in this are profiled in a really honest and true way. There's no attempt to make anybody a bad guy or a good guy other than Avery Brundage, who was a crypto-fascist bad guy, always was. And yeah, if he can take me on if he wants, from wherever he is now. It's hot wherever he is. But there were some real challenges for a lot of our athletes. Mel Pender, for instance, was in ROTC. If he puts up a black glove, he's going to not only get kicked out of ROTC, he's going to be sent immediately to Vietnam. George Foreman had never had anything in his life, and he was not going to blow his chance at being a professional boxer by doing something that the Olympic Committee or the U.S. Olympic Committee or some sports organization would do to take away his ability to continue. And so we have this is also the Olympics that gives us the Fosbury flip, which they didn't even know was legal, you know, six months before Dick Fosbury started doing
the flop.
Yeah,
not Fosbury the flop.
He started it originally, it was called the flip, then it became the flop. But a lot of the athletes are just chafing at the militarized way that the Olympics have been run, and they're not going to do it much anymore. In fact, the Harvard crew guys signed on with a group of people that wore buttons to protest the way that African-American athletes particularly were treated in the United States. They all went on to be doctors and lawyers, right? Every single member of that crew from the coxswain back went on to be a doctor or a lawyer. But they risk a tremendous amount. Harvard was in danger of getting sanctioned for these things. They said, no, free expression. It's amazing to think what Olympic athletes are allowed to do now compared to what they were allowed to do then. They tried to make the closing ceremonies only seven athletes each, and everybody else had to be up in the stands. But the Americans started jumping over the side and running onto the field. But you also, what's interesting is all the great women sprinters are in here too. From Wyoming, Atias and Wilma Rudolph. She was an observer at this Olympics. And the famous Tiger Bells of East Tennessee State, which we talked about earlier, that this is an Olympic where the U.S. Olympic team bonds as a team, and the racial discord is not felt among the people on those Olympic teams. The racial discord exists between the Olympic Committee. Avery Brundage made racist remarks about the players in this. I mean, players and the people that were involved in this. And Smith and Carlos were sent home after they right. won their medals. Now, you've got Lee Evans is in this Olympics. When you think about the concentration of sprinters, since the last time out with Usain Bolt and some of those guys, maybe it's as good a field, but an absolutely riveting book. And here's the other thing. It's funny. There are a lot of times in here where they're just really funny stories. One of my favorite being when one of the Tiger Bells, I'm going to forget which one it was now, needed to get to go to a party when the Olympics were over, and she didn't speak Spanish, but the guys on the Harvard crew did, and so she said she needed one of them to go shopping with her. It was Wilma Rudolph. She said she needed someone to go shopping with her. They said, why? She said, because I need to buy a black bra that fastens in the front, and I don't know how to buy that in Spanish. So a hero off goes Wilma Rudolph, great, with one of the guys from the Harvard crew through Mexico City on these little kinds of errands that showed, and I think this is what Howard Bryant's comment about the book says best. Richard Hoffer reminds us why sports matter. Major things were accomplished for human rights and dignity and for equality as a result of these Olympics, and there were more spies there than at any other Olympic, which is, as Posner had mentioned, because the Russians were worried that all the Eastern European athletes were going to protest against their invasion. We've got our people worried about our guys going over and talking to the Russians and the like. So that it was apparently the most bugged Olympics of all time. Of course, we didn't go to Moscow, which might have changed that. But this is a really, really good book because, it gives you the history, but it really looks at the people. And some of these people, when you see where a Tommy Smith or a John Carlos came from and how in the end they were cheated out of, Tommy Smith was supposed to play pro football. Nope, that was hauled away. No, they've done okay. They've become track coaches. They've worked with kids. They gave up millions and millions and millions of dollars to do what they did.
Now, when John Carlos was on with us, he told us that Harry Edwards' plan was a complete boycott. Why did they decide to go this route?
Well, Edwards realized that he couldn't get enough people for a total boycott, and he was getting so many death threats, Edwards, that he sort of decided he was going to go lie low somewhere. When Mel Pender and some of the other guys who had either ROTC commitments or had other commitments where they were going to lose, they were going to be in big trouble, when they said, "Look, I can't support this." What happened was Smith and Smith's wife and Carlos' wife started talking about these various things they might do. So, they had to spend 89 cents to find black socks. They couldn't find black socks anywhere to wear or to go barefoot or to have the raised fist and the black gloves. But one of the reasons the gloves were there because they did not want to touch Avery Brundage's skin.
Wow.
I'll tell you something. When I found that out, I sat back in my chair and I went, I had to take a deep breath because, he was one of the all-time slime bags in the history of sport. A true Nazi sympathizer. That's not fake news. And these guys had to decide whether to give up their dream as Olympians, give up their pride in their race, give up their pride in their country. These people did not hate the United States of America. And anybody that painted them that way was wrong. They just felt they had to say something about the inequality and the way things went. And then when you learned about all the Puma and Adidas payoffs and the history of that, it's really a cool book. And I love the subtitle, American Passion and Defiance in the 1968 Mexico City Olympics.
A new edition of Richard Hoffer's Something in the Air out in paperback right now. Bruce, thanks as always.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a good book.